morning. Welcome to Shattering Myths, the program that is produced for those of you who are open to the realization or have come to recognize that all of the world's political, religious, economic, military, and media institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive. One such institution, maybe the worst in the history of humankind, is the Roman Catholic Church. Now, I say perhaps the worst in all of human history, with a recognition that their imposition on Europe, as we transitioned, as the world transitioned from the ruthless imperial and disgusting, I mean perverted imperial rule of Rome, to the Roman Catholic Church. The transition was completed in around 400 CE with Theodosius, and he imposed the lord feudal serf states of marriage of cleric and king, and of absolute subjugation of the population, claiming divine authority for himself, that really enslaved Europe, kept the world in the dark for a better part of 1,000 years. So it's really hard to find an institution that's had that negative an influence over the world for that long a period of time. But I don't call the Roman Catholic Church perhaps the worst in human history, the worst institution in human history, just because of my own evaluation of human history, but because that's what Yahweh says. And it's extraordinarily clear. In fact, I don't know why it is that so many people have a difficult time recognizing this, because as you read Daniel, which is a book that chronicles all of human history from the point of Daniel's writing, because Yahweh had already chronicled all of human history up to the point of Daniel, at least that part that is of interest to him and should be of interest to us. And then he talks about how the kingdom that was the superpower of the world, that Daniel was in, Babylon, would fall, to whom they would fall, the Median-Persian Empire, and how the Persians then would then fall to the Greeks with Alexander the Great, exactly as it played out hundreds of years after Daniel was writing these prophecies down, and then how Rome would defeat the Greeks. But that history doesn't end there. With the fourth beast, and it was very clear that each of these human institutions is a beast. They are sadistic. They are everything that he despises. And he says that the Roman imperial brutality that he so much despised and spoke so harshly about would give way to a beast that would grow out of Rome. He didn't distinguish it as a separate beast, but instead as a reemergence of that beast, of the imperial Rome turning into the Roman Catholic Church under Theodosius. And as that occurred, God said that this beast would be the most vicious of all, the most caustic to his creation, and that it would continue to menace not just part of the world, but the entire world, right up until the last days. This is the beast that is the beast of Babylon. This is Roman Catholicism, the institution God is most critical of, and every institution that he discusses throughout time. And mind you, he's extraordinarily critical of the religion of Judaism. But Christianity, particularly as it's manifest in Roman Catholicism, is his least favorite, most counterproductive institution. Two books are now deepening a Vatican scandal with tales of mismanagement and greed, such as sainthood causes that can cost $500,000 to promote. and a Monsignor who broke down the wall of his next-door neighbor's apartment, a sick elderly priest, because he wanted to expand his already palatial apartment. Pope Francis has made a priority, they say, and by his own admission at least, of a reform of Vatican bureaucracy known as the Curia, a hive of intrigue and gossip, and appointed a commission of 8 experts. He did so in 2013 to gather information and make recommendations. Well, it was these very recommendations, it was these very assessments of the corruption within the very heart of Roman Catholicism that caused Pope Benedict the 16th to resign. And I said that at the time of the resignation, he at the time had just been presented this huge, thick red book. And that red book was had in it the briefings of the investigations that had initially been launched on the corruption in Roman Catholicism. It had the corruptions of priestly pedophilia, but more importantly, the church's overt cover-up. It had in it the money laundering schemes that the Roman Catholic, the Roman Catholic Church had been involved in. It had just this enormous swath of information that showed that the Roman Catholic Church was screwed up beyond any hope. And he simply resigned because he was tarred and feathered with the realizations that were found in this study. And you could tell that at the time, that's why he was resigning. It had nothing to do with anything other than the disclosures that the church had found that it had been criminal. And that when his predecessor, when Pope Francis Bergoglio came to power with the Pope Emeritus now out of sight, he himself was a corrupter. That's why he was sent to this long time out in the windowless cell by the Jesuits, exiled by the Jesuits for being out of control. And so now he is being confronted with these same realities. And his response is the same as most popes before him, which is that he's not accepting blame for what is occurring and has occurred, but is instead trying to lash out at those who are leaking the documents which proves the church's malfeasance. The leaks in these new books are seen as part of a bitter internal struggle between reformers and the old guard. That's not true. What they reveal is that the Roman Catholic Church is a complete fraud. It's all about the money. It's all about power. It's never been about anything other than money and power. And that those who seek money and power are perverted. This week, the Vatican arrested 2 former members of the commission in an investigation into stolen documents. So the very people who had been tasked with the job of trying to investigate the Vatican have now been arrested. It's the church doing what the church has always done. Rather than accept responsibility for priestly pedophilia, they cover it up. This time, those that were charged with determining the extent of the church's corruption are now have now been arrested by the church. A new book by Nuzzi, a journalist whose revelations have driven the scandal, makes some startling allegations, including the charge that the Vatican officials who promote sainthood bring in hundreds of thousands of euros in donations for their causes. In other words, if you want to present somebody in your country for sainthood, or somebody that, you know, you have an affinity with for sainthood, the only way you get it considered is to bribe those in charge of presenting these notions to the Pope. And then once the money is sent in, and it's typically in the hundreds of thousand dollars for a prevailing case, those who solicit the money aren't accountable. They can spend the money on themselves. They can do anything they want to. They can throw a giant orgy if they wish to. We don't think that hasn't been done in the Vatican, has countless times. So there's no oversight whatsoever on how the money is spent. In his book, Merchants in the Temple, I don't know where there's a temple, unless you're talking about a pagan temple associated with Roman Catholicism, obtained Tuesday by the Associated Press, 2 days ahead of the publication, of its scheduled publication, Newsy estimates that an average price for sainthood costs around 500,000 euros, saying that some have gone as high as 750,000 euros. Yeah, you know, it's like the indulgence. In this case, you're buying something that God is ferociously hateful of. Promoting someone to a saint and therefore honoring a dead person in this way, suggesting that a person can be prayed to with some effect, is something that God says is an abomination, and that those that do this He hates. So the Torah's instructions in this regard are straightforward, but the Church, Roman Catholic Church, will take $1 million of your money and do that which angers God, and they'll do so in the name of God, making it all the worse. He says that causes of saintly candidates who don't inspire rich donors languish. He also recounts a tale involving Monsignor Siaka, a top official in the Vatican State Administration. Imagine that the Roman Catholic Church has decided that it needs to be viewed as a state so that it can claim diplomatic immunity, so that it can address other nations as if it were a nation itself. You know, it's about the same size as in fact, the farm that I'm on today is considerably larger than the Vatican. In 2012, this book reports, this Monsignor, who is a senior individual in the state administration of the Vatican, wanted a fancier apartment. So when his neighbor was hospitalized, he took advantage of his absence to break down the wall separating their residences and incorporated extra rooms into his apartment, furniture and all. When the elderly priest came home to find his possessions all in boxes, he just died a short time thereafter. Francis, who lives in a hotel room, summarily demoted the individual and forced him to move out. Good deal there. A second book by Fittipaldi, a reporter for El Expresso magazine, details financial wrongdoing at the Vatican, citing reports by the independent auditor. So each of these people aren't making this up. They're getting internal Vatican reports, internal Roman Catholic reports that prove the malfeasance. Fittipaldi said that nearly 400,000 euros donated in 2013 by churches worldwide to help the poor wound up in an off-the-books Vatican account. The Vatican describes the books as the fruit of a great betrayal of trust given by the Pope, and as far as the authors go, an operation to take advantage of a gravely illicit act of handing over confidential documentation. If you don't hate the Roman Catholic Church, if you don't just despise it, there's something wrong with your moral compass. Here, these documents are reporting that the Roman Catholic Church's leaders are corrupt, that they cannot and should not be trusted, that they're frauds, that they're in it for self-indulgence, that they're laundering money, that they're taking bribes, that they're trying to live exalted lives on the donations of others. And the internal documentation carried out by the Vatican's own investigators proves this. And rather than the church saying, mea culpa, oh, we're so sorry, we'll try to do better. We had some bad apples, but, you know, we tried to weed out the bad apples, and we're going to set a higher standard, and we're going to stop cheating, lying, deceiving, covering up. We're gonna stop operating like a criminal enterprise. No, what they did instead is said that the problem here is that these investigators were given a trust by the Pope. They were trusted by the Pope, and they did their job. And then when there is nothing but a counter-up and denial, these men who found the truth reported it to the media, and that the Roman Catholic Church cannot tolerate. It is exposure. It is the light that they detest. Cockroaches scurrying around in the darkness when the light is shined on them, even when it's their own light. They blame the light, not themselves. Welcome to the world, circa 2015. The books and this week's arrests of those who were conducting the investigations mark a new phase in the what's called the Vatican leaks scandal. The saga began in 2012 when an earlier newsy expose peaked with the conviction of Benedict Butler on charges that he supplied Newsy with stolen documents, and ended a year later when the clearly exhausted Benedict resigned, unable to carry on. Remember, they put the Butler in a Vatican jail, stuffed him in a room where he couldn't even lie down. What? Because he became privy to documents that prove that the Roman Catholic Church was a fraud, and the Pope wouldn't act on them, so he released them to the press. Newsy's new book, written from the perspective of the Reform Commission, whose archives were supposed to remain top secret. You know, if you've got top secret archives, if you've got anything in your world that's top secret, you probably shouldn't have it. If you're an organization that has to have secrets, you're probably not a moral organization. It focuses, particularly when you claim to be a religious organization and you have to have secrets. What in the world could you know that needs to be kept a secret? God doesn't have any secrets. Focuses on resistance it encountered in getting information out of Vatican departments that have long enjoyed complete autonomy in budgeting, hiring, and spending. The book says that one of the commission's priorities was getting a handle on the Vatican's vast real estate holdings. Newsy cites a commission report that found that the value of the real estate was 3 billion euros, 7 times higher than the amount entered on the Roman Catholic Church's balance sheets. 3 billion euros. Their own financial accounting is off by 7 times. Rents are sometimes 100% below market value, the commission found, including apartments given free to cardinals and to bureaucrats as part of their compensation or retirement package. The book says that if market rates were applied, employees' homes would generate a rental of 20 million euros rather than the 6 million euros that they're currently collecting. It is an extraordinarily disgusting organization. Speaking of economic frauds, global warming that has now become climate change is being promoted for one agenda, and that is redistribution of wealth. It gives people power as they take from those who have been productive and give to those who are not, empowering and enriching the administrators in between. But that's the purpose of climate change legislation. The notion that the ice sheet is melting in the on the poles, and that as a result of it melting, the oceans are rising, and that people are going to be flooded out, and that the disaster is lurking as a result of man-made global warming is a complete and utter farce. So let's just deal with the part of it right now that made the news, but barely. Only one periodical that I scan picked it up, and it was published sometime earlier this week. Snow that began piling up 10,000 years in Antarctica is adding enough ice to offset thinning glaciers, according to a NASA study. The latest figures appear to challenge other studies, including the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which found that Antarctica is overall losing land and ice. That's a lie. The opposite is true. Our main disagreement is for East Antarctica and the interior of West Antarctica, as well as the most of the continent, where we see an ice gain that grossly exceeds the losses in the other areas. Adding that his team measured the overall height changes over large areas, as well as large changes observed over smaller areas. According to the new analysis of satellite data, the Arctic ice sheet showed a net gain of 102 billion tons of ice. A net gain of 112 billion tons of ice from 1992 to 2001. This is the period of time, of course, that they're saying, oh, global warming, losing ice. 112 billion tons of ice as a net gain from 1992 to 2001. That net gain slowed a bit to 82 billion tons of ice per year. Now, this 112 billion tons of ice, this wasn't that over the period of 9 years. That was 112 billion tons of ice gained a year, and the gain reduced to 82 billion tons of ice per year between 2003 and 2008. But they were still gaining, not just a little bit, 82 billion tons per year. And yet, all of the climatologists and politicos were saying, we're about to drown as the ice is melting. So here, from 1992 to 2008, during the time that global warming is being presented as the man's ultimate demise, man-made global warming, you know, the polar bears are not going to have any ice to hunt on. Poor polar bears are going to be out without any ice, and that the poles are melting, and that the polar ice cap is, as it's going to diminish, is going to fill the oceans with unimaginable amounts of water, and all the coastal areas are going to be deluged with water. Well, during that very time, Antarctica was gaining between 82 and 112 billion tons of ice each year. The mass gain from the thickening of the East Antarctica remained steady from 1992 to 2008 at 200 billion tons a year. While losses from coastal regions of West Antarctica and the tiny Antarctica Peninsula increased by about 65 billion tons a year. So what they did to make it look like the sky is falling is they reported the net losses in the Arctic Peninsula and West Antarctica and didn't report the net gains. The same thing that religious people do. Let's take it out of context to create the wrong impression. It's what Paul did to create Christianity. It is a deceitful and disgusting tactic. The extra snowfall that began 10,000 years ago as we emerged from the last ice age has been slowly accumulating on the ice sheet and compacting into solid ice over the last 1,000 years. Thickening of the ice in East Antarctica and the interior of West Antarctica by an average of 0.7 inches per year. The small thickening, sustained over thousands of years and spread over the vast expanse of these sectors of Antarctica, corresponds to a very large ice gain, enough to outweigh the losses from faster flowing glaciers in other parts of the continent and around the world. And therefore, they say, this is not contributing to global sea level rise. You've been lied to. All by smart people who have deliberately and knowingly taken reports, studies out of context to misrepresent the truth. The ultimate out of context is that in the context of the Earth's history, going back many millions of years ago, we have absolute proof that the Earth goes through cycles of warming and cooling, and that these cycles last each half cycle, the warming cycle and the cooling cycle, last a minimum of 300 years and a maximum of about 700 years. They average between 5 and 600 years. And they have been taking place, warming and then cooling, for millions of years. During the last 5,000 years, almost 6,000 years of recorded history, we have a combination not only of the sediment proofs, the core samples that demonstrate the warming and cooling periods, but we also have its influence on human civilization. And we can trace back through the rise and fall, for example, of the Greek Empire, the rise and fall of the Roman Empire, through even the Dark Ages in Europe and the spread of disease throughout Europe. How these periods have affected humanity. And the fact is that humanity thrives during the warm periods, and it suffers during the cold periods. You might expect that, which is why we shouldn't be concerned about global warming. We should applaud it. But this last swing from a cooling period to a warming period began right around 1850 to 1875, which is why photographs taken at that time of glaciers show them at their full extent, because that was the conclusion of a cooling period, now just beginning the warming cycle. We have been in a warming cycle for about 150 years. That's just the nature of it, nothing to do with man. The whole global warming, man-made global warming, climate change, is nothing but an out-of-context farce. The number of migrants turning to a more recent catastrophe, one of our own making, this one is actually man-made, who have arrived in Greece this year has topped 500,000 just through Greece. Remember, yesterday we were reading about the number who were arriving in Europe by sea and the number that were coming in through Turkey, and that collectively we're dealing with 1 million people a month, and now we've reached a rate of 8,000 a day just through Greece alone. 8,000 a day just through Greece. And there's no place to process them. And you know, the story that we talked about yesterday, where there's that one little town in Germany that had about 100 residents, and they were sending in 1,000 refugees, and there was no school, there's no market. There's also no factory in that town. There's no work in that town. The 100 residents that are there can manage their own farms. But there's no factory there. How are you going to put 1,000 people to work? Well, by the fact that they're sending them there tells you for certain that Angela Merkel's claim that we're bringing in millions of Muslim refugees because there's not enough Germans to man our factories and we need more workers is a farce. The places that they are bringing them, there are no factories. Oops. Somebody has been lying. This story continues. This says the number of migrants are reaching Europe has reached record levels. The International Organization for Migration says that nearly a million has arrived thus far this year, compared with a quarter of that number last year. The United Nations High Commission for Refugees says that the number arriving by sea has already increased more than five times the number from the same period a year ago. It is an extraordinarily sad situation that we have that is going to fundamentally change Europe. I was reading a story, this goes back several weeks ago, but it was sort of interesting, that there's a Temple of Santiago that was became visible in the watershed of a river a drought condition in Mexico made it visible. Now this Temple of Santiago became visible. The people began to celebrate and the like. But it's really interesting. The church harkens back to the Spanish colonial times when they were trying to convert all of the Aztec and Maya to Roman Catholicism. You know, the more subjects you have, the more power you have, the more you can take people's money by asking them to give it to you as opposed to having to kill them and steal it from them. But you looked at this temple, and what was just amazing about it is the overall size of it, the gaudiness of it, and how during this time, the Spanish were enslaving the native population, and they used slaves to build their monstrosity. And that here you had this gargantuan building with walls that were 10, 12 feet thick, all engraved and embellished. Well, the people living around it were treated as slaves because they had been enslaved. They were impoverished. They were living miserable lives, all to enrich the Roman Catholic Church. It was seeing this building emerge from that period of time was a glimpse back into the time that the Roman Catholic Church had absolute control. Now, it's interesting that today socialist secular humanism is the dominant religion. And it was actually born out of a hatred of Roman Catholicism and the rule of cleric and king that imposed the feudal conditions that were witnessed throughout Europe. And so Adam Weishaupt rebelled against the rule of king appointed by the Pope. And in the process of doing that, he created a contrarian socialist dictate. And it has only been since the creation of his Order of the Illumes that Roman Catholicism has gradually lost its power and influence. Now, that's not a good thing because socialist secular humanism is every bit as corrupt, in fact, more deadly than was Roman Catholicism. The socialists over the last 100 years have eliminated over 150 million people through Nazi Germany, through Soviet Russia, through communist China. There's no more deadly institution on planet Earth. So this is one of those things where the emergence of an evil organization, Adam Weishaupt, his Order of the Illumes, socialist secular humanism, actually was the primary tool that was used to diminish the corrupt influence of Roman Catholicism. But doesn't exactly mean that we should be celebrating the nature of the Illuminists and socialist secular humanism. I was reading during the break a story that came out of Chicago. I don't know if you know this, but there about how many of you paid attention to this particular story, but some months ago, a Chicago, Illinois police officer was being celebrated as a hero. And during the time that that Black Lives Matter was gaining the most traction, he was being put up by the right as an example of a good police officer that gave his life in the line of duty, that he was trying to serve and protect the community of Chicago when he was gunned down by those who hate police officers. And we should rally around this. And there are big funerals and parades and everything to honor this Chicago, Illinois policeman, hailed as a hero who was gunned down in the line of duty. Only one problem. He actually committed suicide. The investigation into his death has now been completed. He committed suicide. Welcome to the worlds of myths and propaganda. There's another story that regarding police that has come to light here recently as well. There was a police officer, and I've forgotten the his jurisdiction, but it was announced yesterday that he had, and he's now been arraigned for filing a fictitious report. He claimed that he pulled over a driver, and then when he pulled over the driver, the subject pulled his gun and shot him, and that he returned fire in self-defense. Well, what they have found is that the driver did not have a gun, the driver did not fire a gun, that the driver was never actually pulled over, although he was shot dead by the officer. And that the hole in the officer's sleeve of his shirt that he said was proof that he was shot first and was just returning fire was faked by the officer. That 100% of the story was made up to justify his drive-by killing of an innocent motorist. I was reading a number of stories today on Syria. And the nature of what's taking place by the Islamic State. And, you know, the raid that America sided with the Kurds to go in and liberate a prison in Iraq that was controlled by the Islamic State. Well, as it turns out, none of the prisoners there were Kurds. Now, the Kurds and the Americans went in there to liberate Kurds because America is using the Kurds as a proxy to fight the Islamic State. Well, they went into the prison and not a single person was a Kurd. Now, they did find in the prison all Arabs, and all of the Arabs in the prisons were Shiites. And the Shiites were being tortured by the Islamic State to elicit confessions, and then once they give their confession, then they were summarily executed. And so the day that America and the Kurds went into this particular prison, they had three or four of the inmates that were scheduled for execution the following day were spared, but they at least could tell their story. And they all said, yeah, they confessed to every aspect of what they were being interrogated and charged with. And they said, you know, that they figured they were going to get killed anyway. And so why not just confess and get it over more quickly so you don't have to endure the torture? And to a large degree, even if somebody hasn't committed a an act that would warrant some sort of societal punishment, if you're torturing them, they will say anything to end the torture. Almost everybody will. It's very few people will sit there and are so wrapped up in either patriotism or wrapped up in some belief system that they will allow people to torture them ad nauseum without making up some story just to get the torture to end. Knowing that whoever doing the torture is not going to let them go and let them be a walking example of the malfeasance of the institution who purported who had perpetrated the harm, you're going to get killed anyway. So the person spills their guts. And so these were lurid stories of how they were suffocated, very much like the waterboarding done by the U.S., and that they were beaten. And like the individuals that were sodomized by the CIA. And I'm reading this, and I'm saying, okay, so this journalist is horrified that these Shiite Muslims were being tortured by the Sunni Muslims. And yet, why weren't they horrified when the American CIA, under orders by the president, vice president, national security advisor, conducted torture? You know, why were we okay in doing it? And these, the Islamic State not okay? It's a heck of a question, isn't it? The other thing that was struck me is the Islamic State is claiming the credit for bringing down the Russian airliner. Now, why would any group, particularly a religious group like the Islamic State, want to take credit for killing a couple of hundred innocent civilians? Killing unarmed, innocent civilians. Let's say they actually did it. Why would you want to take credit for that? And when you think about it, that you would take credit for, that you would actually celebrate killing civilians. I don't think they, though I don't know if they did or didn't. I'll speak of issues that could have brought down that airplane here in a second, but just think of the how perverted your religion has to be for you to celebrate killing of unarmed, innocent civilians and think that's a good thing. And then also think of that, let's just say that you did it, but you know that doing so would earn the wrath of the world. Why would you say it? Why would you just publicly? Why not just take credit for it quietly? And then it becomes obvious that the videos that the Islamic State released of their executions and the claims of having downed an airplane, which I don't think they actually blew up, but we'll find out later, are done because they want to be attacked. They want exactly what the world is doing. Now, if you have an institution that is so evil that they're kidnapping little girls to make them sex slaves, and they're torturing individuals ad nauseum, and they're engaged in acts of wanton mass murder, and they're using suicide bombers against defenseless civilians, why would you want to do what they want you to do? Why would you play into their hands? How could you be that stupid? Because they're obviously doing this, they're releasing this to garner attacks from the West. So why is the West attacking him? Why would you do what they're asking you to? You know, if somebody wants to commit suicide because they think, you know, if I commit suicide at this time, the great mothership will take me up and I'll be in great mothership paradise. And they douse themselves with gasoline. And then they go up to somebody that has a match and starts insulting them. And are you going to throw the match? And that's basically what they're doing here. Now, as it relates to that airplane, the same thing that's happened with so many Airbuses happened in this particular case. The tail section of that airplane was found 3 miles from the rest of the wreck, just as it was. The tail section was found, the vertical stabilizer was found miles from the rest of the aircraft. In fact, certainly floating on top of the water in the one that came down in off the coast of Brazil, making its way to Europe. The same thing occurred as an Airbus took off from JFK in turbulence, and the pilot was trying to conduct a maneuver of a sharp turn using the rudder. There is a problem with the stability of the vertical stabilizer or tail section on Airbuses. In this particular case, the tail fell off in midair. When the tail falls off and you don't have the vertical stabilizer, the airplane is now uncontrolled. It will whip around, and the centrifugal force of it whipping around will cause the airplane to disintegrate in midair. This airplane clearly fell apart in midair. And while there is a possibility, and where there is a U.S. satellite showing a fuel explosion on the aircraft, there is no bomb residue found anywhere on the aircraft. So if the tail section did dislodge and it caused the airplane to spin uncontrollably and therefore break up in midair, as it's breaking up, the electrical wiring that would have been severed in and around the wings and through the fuselage could well have ignited the fuel, which would just been a secondary effect of an airplane now doomed because of the inadequacy of its tail. Boeing spends a lot of money. Some think they spend too much money on the metallurgy of their tail connector. Hi.